Have you ever felt small in the face of a giant challenge? Have you ever had the sensation that the whole world was against you, even when you knew you were doing the right thing? If so, then you have more in common with one of the greatest kings in history than you might imagine. Get ready to dive into the incredible journey of David, a simple shepherd who became the most beloved king of Israel and a man after God's own heart. But don't be fooled, David was not perfect. His story is filled with ups and downs, crushing victories and devastating failures. And that's exactly what makes his journey so fascinating and relevant to us today. Let's begin from the start, with the unlikely rise of a young shepherd to the king's court. Our story begins in Bethlehem, a small town on the outskirts of Jerusalem. It is here that we find the family of Jesse, an ordinary man, but whose lineage was about to change the course of Israel's history. In 1 Samuel 16:1, we read that the Lord sent the prophet Samuel to Bethlehem, to the house of Jesse, with a secret and crucial mission, to anoint the new king of Israel. Jesse had 8 sons, and David was the youngest. While his older brothers stood out for their strength and stature, David spent his days in the fields, tending to his father's sheep. This seemingly insignificant task was shaping the character of the future king. In the fields of Bethlehem, David learned lessons that no palace could teach. He developed courage while protecting the flock from predators, compassion while caring for the weaker sheep, and leadership while guiding the flock to green pastures and still waters. Unbeknownst to him, he was being prepared to lead a nation. In 1 Samuel 16:11, when Samuel arrived at Jesse's house, all the older sons were presented one by one. But the Lord had not chosen any of them. Intrigued, Samuel asked Jesse if he had any more sons. "There is still the youngest," Jesse replied, "but he is tending the sheep." When David finally arrived, Samuel's heart must have leaped. There stood a young man with a ruddy appearance, beautiful eyes, and good looks. But what really mattered was what the Lord saw. "Rise and anoint him," the Lord said to Samuel, "for this is the one chosen." In 1 Samuel 16:13, we read the moment that would forever change David's life and the destiny of Israel. Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed David in the presence of his brothers. At that moment, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Imagine the scene. A young shepherd, probably confused and surprised, being anointed as the future king of Israel. His brothers, who had always seen him as the little brother, were now witnessing something extraordinary. But David's journey was just beginning. After his anointing, David returned to the fields. Externally, nothing had changed. He was still a shepherd, still tending the sheep. But internally, a transformation had begun. The Spirit of the Lord was with him, preparing him for what was to come. Meanwhile, in King Saul's court, darkness was settling in. In 1 Samuel 16:14 23, we read that the Spirit of the Lord had departed from Saul, and an evil spirit tormented him. Saul's servants, seeking a solution, suggested that someone skilled in playing the harp be found, believing that music could calm the disturbed king. It was then that David's name came up. One of the servants knew him and described him as someone who not only played well, but was also brave, a warrior, wise in speech, and of good appearance. And most importantly, the Lord is with him. Thus, David was summoned to Saul's court. The young shepherd, who had recently spent his days in the fields of Bethlehem, now found himself in the royal palace, playing to soothe the tormented spirit of the king. Saul was impressed with David and made him his armor-bearer. At this point in the story, we see how God was orchestrating events. David's musical talent, developed during the long hours in the fields, now positioned him to learn about the court and leadership, preparing him for his future role. But the moment that would truly define David's youth was yet to come. In 1 Samuel 17, we find the famous confrontation between David and Goliath. The Israelite army was at war with the Philistines, and a Philistine champion named Goliath challenged the Israelites daily to send out a champion for single combat. Goliath was a giant, standing about 3 meters tall. His armor weighed over 50 kilograms, and the tip of his spear was like a weaver's beam. For 40 days, he mocked the Israelite army, challenging them to send a champion to fight him. David, who had temporarily returned to tend his father's sheep, was sent to the battlefield to bring supplies to his older brothers. Upon arrival, he heard Goliath's challenge and was indignant. "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" he asked. David's courage in the face of the giant did not arise in that moment. It had been forged in the fields of Bethlehem, where he had faced lions and bears to protect his flock. When questioned about his ability to face Goliath, David confidently replied, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." Armed only with his sling, 5 smooth stones from the brook, and an unwavering faith in God, David advanced to face Goliath. The contrast could not have been greater. A young shepherd against an experienced warrior, a sling against a sword, faith against brute strength. When Goliath saw David, he scorned him for his youth. "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" mocked the giant. But David replied with words that would echo through the ages, "You come against me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." With a single stone from his sling, David struck Goliath in the forehead, and the giant fell. In an instant, the improbable had happened. The shepherd had defeated the warrior. Faith had triumphed over fear. David's victory over Goliath was not just a military triumph, but a powerful testimony of the strength that comes from faith in God. It showed Israel and the world that the Lord does not see as man sees. While others looked at outward appearances, God looked at the heart. This event marked the true beginning of David's rise. From an obscure shepherd in Bethlehem, he became a national hero overnight. Women sang in the streets. Saul struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. David's youth, from his secret anointing to his public victory over Goliath, laid the foundation for all that was to come. It teaches us powerful lessons about preparation, courage, and trust in God. David did not become a great leader overnight. Each experience in his youth, tending sheep, playing for Saul, facing Goliath, was a building block in the construction of his character and leadership. He faced his Goliaths long before stepping onto the battlefield. The story of David's youth reminds us that God often works behind the scenes, preparing us for a purpose greater than we can imagine. In moments of apparent insignificance, when we feel forgotten or underestimated, God may be shaping our character and developing the skills we will need for our future. David's courage in the face of Goliath challenges us to confront our own giants with faith. What are the Goliaths in our lives? Fears, insecurities, seemingly insurmountable challenges. David's story reminds us that, with God, no obstacle is too great. Finally, David's youth teaches us about the importance of faithfulness in small things. Before leading armies, David led sheep. Before playing before crowds, he played in solitary fields. His faithfulness in these seemingly insignificant tasks prepared him for the great responsibilities that would come. As we move forward in David's story, we will see how these early years shaped the man he would become. His experiences as a shepherd, musician, and young warrior laid the groundwork for his reign as the greatest king of Israel. But the road ahead would not be easy. David would face challenges, persecutions, and temptations that would test his faith and character to the limit. David's victory over Goliath marked the beginning of a new phase in his life. The young shepherd was now known throughout Israel as a war hero. While the people celebrated, an unlikely friendship began to form in the court of King Saul. Jonathan, Saul's son and heir to the throne, was deeply impressed by David. The biblical text gives us a beautiful description of this friendship in 1 Samuel 18:1. There we read, "After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself." This was not a superficial friendship, but a deep bond based on mutual respect and admiration. The depth of this friendship is demonstrated in Jonathan's actions. In 1 Samuel 18:4, we see a symbolic and significant gesture. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic, and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. This act was not just a gift between friends. In the culture of the time, it was a recognition of David's right to the throne. Jonathan, the royal heir, was essentially abdicating his right in favor of David. As this friendship blossomed, David also gained favor in the eyes of King Saul and the people. In 1 Samuel 18:5, we read, "Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops, and Saul's officers as well." David demonstrated not only courage on the battlefield, but also wisdom and skill in leadership. However, David's success would soon become a source of trouble. After a significant military victory, the women of Israel came out to celebrate, singing, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands." 1 Samuel 18:7. This song, while celebrating both Saul and David, stirred jealousy in the heart of the king. Saul's reaction to this song marks the beginning of a dramatic shift in his relationship with David. In 1 Samuel 18:8-9, we read, "Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him. 'They have credited David with tens of thousands,' he thought, 'but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?'" And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. Saul's jealousy quickly turned into hostile actions against David. The next day, as we are told in 1 Samuel 18:10-11, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house, and David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand and hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice. This incident marks the beginning of a long series of Saul's attempts to kill David. The young warrior, who was once welcomed in the king's court, now found himself in constant danger. Despite Saul's growing hostility, David continued to prosper. In 1 Samuel 18:14-16, we read, "In everything he did, he had great success, because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns." Seeing that he could not eliminate David directly, Saul began to scheme in more subtle ways to eliminate him. One of these attempts involved his own daughter, Michal. In 1 Samuel 18:20-21, we read, "Now Saul's daughter Michal was in love with David, and when they told Saul about it, he was pleased. 'I will give her to him,' he thought, 'so that she may be a snare to him, and so that the hand of the Philistines may be against him.' Saul offered Michal in marriage to David, but with a dangerous condition. He demanded as a dowry 100 foreskins of Philistines, hoping that David would die in the attempt to fulfill this task. However, David not only survived, but exceeded the requirement, bringing back 200 foreskins. Saul then had no choice but to give Michal in marriage to David. The marriage to Michal, however, did not bring safety to David. Saul's hostility continued to grow. In 1 Samuel 19:1, we read, "Saul told his son Jonathan and all his officials to kill David, but Jonathan was very fond of David." Here we see how the friendship between David and Jonathan would become crucial for David's survival. Jonathan, risking his own position, interceded for David with his father. In 1 Samuel 19:4-5, he argued, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Temporarily convinced by Jonathan's arguments, Saul swore, "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." 1 Samuel 19:6. However, the peace would be short-lived. Soon the evil spirit returned to torment Saul, and he once again tried to kill David with his spear. David managed to escape, but it was clear that he was no longer safe in Saul's court. At this point, Michal, David's wife, played a crucial role in his escape. In 1 Samuel 19:11-12, we read, "Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch it and to kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, 'If you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed.' So Michal let David down through a window, and he fled and escaped." Thus began David's period of exile. The man who had once been the hero of Israel and the favorite of the court now found himself forced to live as a fugitive in his own country. During this time, David sought help in various places. First, he went to the priest Ahimelech at Nob. Not wanting to reveal his situation, David lied about being on a secret mission from the king. Ahimelech, unaware of the danger, provided David with the consecrated bread and the sword of Goliath. This event, although seemingly insignificant, would have tragic consequences later. Doeg the Edomite, one of Saul's servants, was present and later reported the incident to Saul, leading to the execution of Ahimelech and many other priests. From Nob, David fled to Gath, Philistine territory, where he pretended to be insane to avoid being recognized as the famous Israelite warrior. After that, he took refuge in the cave of Adullam, where he was joined by his family and by everyone who was in distress or in debt or discontented. 1 Samuel 22:2. Meanwhile, Saul continued his relentless pursuit of David. The king's obsession with eliminating David led to extreme acts of cruelty, including the massacre of the priests of Nob, who had unknowingly helped David. During this period of flight, David had two notable opportunities to kill Saul, but he refused to do so. The first occurred in the cave of En-Gedi. Saul entered the cave to relieve himself, unaware that David and his men were hiding there. In 1 Samuel 24:4-6 we read, "The men said, 'This is the day the Lord spoke of, when he said to you, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.' Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe." Afterward, David was conscience-stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe, and he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." The second opportunity occurred when David snuck into Saul's camp at night and found the king sleeping. Again, David refused to kill Saul, saying in 1 Samuel 26:9-11, "Don't kill him. Who can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? As surely as the Lord lives, the Lord himself will strike him, or his time will come and he will die, or he will go into battle and perish. But the Lord forbid that I should lay a hand on the Lord's anointed." These actions demonstrate David's deep respect for the authority established by God, even when that authority was being unjustly used against him. David recognized that, despite Saul's flaws, he was still the anointed king of God, and it was not up to David to take the kingdom by force. Saul's persecution of David lasted for years, forcing David to live as a fugitive in his own country and even among Israel's enemies. During this time, David composed many of the Psalms we know today, expressing his anguish, his trust in God, and his determination to remain faithful. This period of flight and exile was a crucial time of formation for David. Away from the comforts of the palace and the glory of military victories, David learned to trust in God in extremely difficult circumstances. He developed leadership skills, gathering and commanding a diverse group of men. These experiences prepared him for the role he would eventually assume as King of Israel. Saul's pursuit of David would only end with the king's death. In a battle against the Philistines, Saul, seeing the desperate situation, took his own life to avoid being captured. When the news reached David, his reaction was one of lament, not joy. In 2 Samuel 1:19, 23-24, we read part of David's lament. "Your glory, Israel, lies slain on your heights. How the mighty have fallen! Saul and Jonathan, in life they were loved and admired, and in death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. Daughters of Israel, weep for Saul, who clothed you in scarlet and finery, who adorned your garments with ornaments of gold." This lament demonstrates David's noble character. Even after years of persecution, he could still see the good in Saul and honor his memory. Moreover, David's lament for Jonathan is particularly moving, highlighting the depth of their friendship. David's journey from a close friend of the king to a pursued enemy was long and difficult. However, through these trials, David's character was shaped and strengthened. He learned lessons of humility, patience, and trust in God that would be crucial in his future role as King of Israel. The story of David and Saul teaches us valuable lessons about leadership, jealousy, friendship, and faithfulness to God. We see how envy can corrupt even those who were once chosen by God, and how integrity and faith can sustain a person through the most difficult trials. As David prepared to assume the throne that God had promised him years before, he carried with him the lessons learned during those years of persecution. These experiences would profoundly shape his reign and his relationship with God in the years to come. The news of Saul and Jonathan's death reached David through a young Amalekite. The messenger, hoping for a reward, claimed to have dealt the final blow to Saul at the king's request. However, his expectation of reward was thwarted by David's reaction. In 2 Samuel 1:14-16 we read, "Then David asked him, 'Why weren't you afraid to lift your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?' Then David called one of his soldiers and said, 'Go, kill him.' So he struck him down, and he died. For David had said to the Amalekite, 'You are responsible for your own death, for your own mouth testified against you when you said, "I killed the Lord's anointed."'" This action of David demonstrated his deep respect for the authority anointed by God, even when that authority had been used against him. It also served as a clear warning to all that any attempt to gain favor with David through violence against his enemies would be severely punished. After a period of mourning, David sought divine guidance for his next step. In 2 Samuel 2:1 we read, "In the course of time, David inquired of the Lord, 'Shall I go up to one of the towns of Judah?' The Lord said, 'Go up.' David asked, 'Where shall I go?' 'To Hebron,' the Lord answered." This consultation with God before acting would be a hallmark of David's reign, distinguishing him from Saul, who often acted on his own. Upon arriving in Hebron, David was anointed king over the tribe of Judah. In 2 Samuel 2:4 it is written, "Then the men of Judah came to Hebron, and there they anointed David king over the tribe of Judah." This was the first step in the fulfillment of the promise that God had made to David years before, when he was secretly anointed by Samuel. However, David's ascent to the throne of all Israel would not be immediate or easy. Abner, the commander of Saul's army, had proclaimed Ishbosheth, Saul's son, as king over the other tribes of Israel. This initiated a period of civil war between Saul's house and David's house. In 2 Samuel 3:1 we read, "The war between the house of Saul and the house of David lasted a long time. David grew stronger and stronger, while the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker." This verse summarizes well the general course of events during this period. But the details of this civil war are marked by tragedy and complexity. One of the most notable events of this period was the death of Abner. After a disagreement with Ishbosheth, Abner decided to change his allegiance to David. He was well received by David and sent away in peace. However, Joab, David's military commander, saw Abner as a threat and assassinated him in revenge for his brother's death. David's reaction to this assassination is revealing. In 2 Samuel 3:28-29, David declares, "Later, when David heard about this, he said, 'I and my kingdom are forever innocent before the Lord concerning the death of Abner son of Ner. It is Joab and his family who are guilty. May Joab's family never be free of someone who has a running sore or leprosy, or who leans on a crutch, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks food.'" This statement shows David's commitment to justice and his refusal to tolerate unnecessary violence, even when perpetrated by his own men. The civil war finally came to an end with the assassination of Ishbosheth by two of his own captains. Hoping to receive a reward from David, they brought Ishbosheth's head to Hebron. Once again, David's reaction surprised everyone. In 2 Samuel 4:9-12, we read, "But David answered Rechab and his brother Baanah, the sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, 'As surely as the Lord lives, who has delivered me out of all trouble, when someone told me, Saul is dead, and thought he was bringing good news, I seized him and put him to death at Ziklag. That was the reward I gave him for his news. How much more when wicked men have killed an innocent man in his own house and on his own bed? Shouldn't I now demand his blood from your hand and rid the earth of you?' So David gave an order to his men, and they killed them. They cut off their hands and feet and hung the bodies by the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in Abner's tomb at Hebron." With Ishbosheth's death, the way was open for David to become king over all Israel. In 2 Samuel 5:1-3, we see the unification of the kingdom. All the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron and said, "We are your own flesh and blood. In the past, while Saul was king over us, you were the one who led Israel on their military campaigns. And the Lord said to you, 'You will shepherd my people Israel, and you will become their ruler.'" When all the elders of Israel had come to King David at Hebron, the king made a covenant with them at Hebron before the Lord, and they anointed David king over Israel. This anointing at Hebron marked the fulfillment of the promise that God had made to David years before. The shepherd of sheep, the court musician, the fugitive warrior, was now the king of all Israel. One of David's first actions as king of unified Israel was the conquest of Jerusalem. In 2 Samuel 5:6-7, we read, "The king and his men marched to Jerusalem to attack the Jebusites who lived there. The Jebusites said to David, 'You will not get in here. Even the blind and the lame can ward you off.' They thought, 'David cannot get in here.' Nevertheless, David captured the fortress of Zion, which is the city of David. The choice of Jerusalem as the capital was strategically brilliant. Situated on the border between the territories of the northern and southern tribes, Jerusalem would serve as a unifying point for the nation. Moreover, since it had not been previously associated with any specific tribe, it could become a truly national city. After establishing Jerusalem as his capital, David faced the threat of the Philistines. In 2 Samuel 5:17-21, we see how David dealt with this situation. When the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over Israel, they went up in full force to search for him. But David heard about it and went down to the stronghold. Now the Philistines had come and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. So David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go and attack the Philistines? Will you deliver them into my hands?" The Lord answered him, "Go, for I will surely deliver the Philistines into your hands." So David went to Baal-perazim and there he defeated them. He said, "As waters break out, the Lord has broken out against my enemies before me." So that place was called Baal Perazim. The Philistines abandoned their idols there, and David and his men carried them off. This victory over the Philistines was significant not only militarily, but also spiritually. The capture and destruction of the Philistine idols symbolized the supremacy of the God of Israel over the gods of neighboring nations. With the nation unified and the capital established, David turned his attention to religious matters. One of his priorities was to bring the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. The Ark, which represented the presence of God among the people, had been absent from the center of national life for many years. The first attempt to bring the Ark to Jerusalem, however, ended in tragedy. In 2 Samuel 6:6-7 we read, "When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out and took hold of the Ark of God, because the oxen stumbled. The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore, God struck him down, and he died there beside the Ark of God." This incident taught David and all Israel an important lesson about the holiness of God and the need to follow his instructions carefully. After a period of 3 months, during which the Ark remained in the house of Obed-Edom, David made a second attempt to bring it to Jerusalem. This time the Ark was transported according to God's instructions, carried by the Levites. The entrance of the Ark into Jerusalem was marked by great celebration. In 2 Samuel 6:14-15 we read, "Wearing a linen ephod, David danced before the Lord with all his might, while he and all Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord with shouts and the sound of trumpets." David's dance before the Ark was an act of pure worship and abandonment to the Lord. However, not everyone appreciated this act of devotion. Michal, the daughter of Saul and David's wife, despised him for his behavior. David's response to Michal in 2 Samuel 6:21-22 reveals much about his heart. David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord, who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house, when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes, but by these slave girls you mentioned, I will be held in honor." With the Ark established in Jerusalem, David desired to build a permanent temple to house it. However, God had other plans. In 2 Samuel 7:5-7, we read God's response through the prophet Nathan. "Go and tell my servant David, this is what the Lord says. Are you the one to build a house for me to dwell in? I have not dwelt in a house since the day I brought the Israelites up out of Egypt to this day. I have been moving from place to place with a tent as my dwelling. Wherever I have moved with all the Israelites, did I ever say to any of their rulers whom I commanded to shepherd my people Israel, 'Why have you not built me a house of cedar?'" Although God denied David's request to build the temple, he made an extraordinary promise to David. In 2 Samuel 7:11-16, God promises, "The Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you. When your days are over and you rest with your ancestors, I will raise up your offspring to succeed you, your own flesh and blood, and I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. When he does wrong, I will punish him with a rod wielded by men, with floggings inflicted by human hands. But my love will never be taken away from him, as I took it away from Saul, whom I removed from before you. Your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever." This promise, known as the Davidic Covenant, is one of the most significant moments in the history of Israel. God promised David an everlasting dynasty, a promise that would find its ultimate fulfillment in Jesus Christ, the Son of David par excellence. David's response to this promise is a beautiful prayer of gratitude and humility. In 2 Samuel 7, 18-19, we read, "Then King David went in and sat before the Lord, and he said, 'Who am I, Sovereign Lord, and what is my family, that you have brought me this far? And as if this were not enough in your sight, Sovereign Lord, you have also spoken about the future of the house of your servant. Is this your usual way of dealing with mankind, Sovereign Lord?'" David's ascent to the throne of Israel marked the beginning of a new era for the nation. Under his leadership, Israel became a regional power, expanding its borders and establishing alliances with neighboring nations. More importantly, David established Jerusalem not only as the political capital of Israel, but also as its spiritual center. David's reign would not be without challenges and personal failures, as we will see in the following chapters of his story. However, the foundation he laid during these early years of his reign, a unified nation, an established capital, and above all, a renewed commitment to God, would shape the future of Israel for generations. David's journey from obscurity in Bethlehem to the throne in Jerusalem is a powerful illustration of God's sovereignty and his plan for his people. Through each stage, from shepherd to court musician, from fugitive warrior to king, David demonstrated unshakable trust in God and a commitment to his will. David's ascent to the throne was not just a personal achievement, but a turning point in the history of Israel. Under his leadership, the nation found unity, strength, and a renewed sense of divine purpose. The choice of Jerusalem as the capital and the establishment of the Ark of the Covenant there laid the groundwork for what would become the center of Jewish worship for centuries. The Davidic covenant, God's promise of an eternal dynasty, pointed beyond the immediate kingdom of David toward a future messianic hope. This promise would become central to the hope and faith of Israel, finding its ultimate fulfillment in Jesus Christ. The story of David's rise teaches us valuable lessons about patience, perseverance, and trust in God's timing. David waited years for the fulfillment of God's promise, facing persecution and exile. However, he refused to seize the kingdom by force, respecting the authority established by God, even when that authority acted unjustly. At the same time, we see in David a leader who was not perfect, but who was willing to learn from his mistakes and seek God's guidance. His reaction to the death of Uzzah and his subsequent careful approach to bringing the Ark to Jerusalem demonstrate a heart willing to submit to God's will, even when it meant admitting and correcting errors. As David established himself as king over all Israel, new challenges awaited him. His reign would be marked by great victories and territorial expansion, but also by deep personal failures and painful family conflicts. However, the foundation laid during these early years, a deep dependence on God, a commitment to justice, and a heart of worship, would continue to define his reign and legacy. David's ascent to the throne is not just a story of personal success, but a testimony to the transformative power of God in the life of an individual and a nation. It is a story that continues to inspire and instruct, reminding us that God can use unlikely people to accomplish his purposes, and that true greatness comes from humble submission to divine will. With the kingdom unified and the capital established in Jerusalem, David turned his attention to expanding and strengthening Israel. His military campaigns were marked by notable successes. In 2 Samuel 8:2-6, we read about some of his conquests. He also defeated the Moabites. He made them lie down on the ground and measured them with a cord. Every two measures of men he separated one to be killed, and one complete measure to remain alive. So the Moabites became subject to David and brought tribute. David also defeated Hadadezer, son of Rehob, king of Zobah, as he went to restore his monument along the Euphrates River. David captured 1,000 of his chariots, 7,000 cavalry and 20,000 foot soldiers. He hamstrung all the chariot horses except 100 of them. When the Arameans of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, king of Zobah, David struck down 22,000 of them. He put garrisons in the Aramean kingdom of Damascus, and the Arameans became subject to him and brought tribute. The Lord gave David victory wherever he went. These victories not only expanded the borders of Israel, but also brought great wealth to the kingdom. David dedicated much of the war plunder to the Lord, demonstrating his gratitude to God for his victories. David's reign was also marked by acts of justice and compassion. In 2 Samuel 9:1, we see David asking, "Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" This led to the encounter with Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, to whom David showed great kindness, fulfilling his promise to Jonathan. However, at the height of his power and success, David committed a sin that would tarnish his reign and bring lasting consequences. The story begins in 2 Samuel 11:1-2. In the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. This woman was Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite, one of David's elite soldiers. Instead of turning away, David sent for her and committed adultery with her. When Bathsheba informed him that she was pregnant, David attempted to cover up his sin. First, he called Uriah back from the battlefield, hoping he would sleep with his wife and thus believe the child was his. But Uriah, demonstrating great integrity, refused to enjoy the comforts of home while his comrades were in battle. In 2 Samuel 11:11, Uriah says to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my lord Joab and my lord's men are camped in the open country. How could I go to my house to eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing." Seeing that his initial plan had failed, David made an even darker decision. He sent Uriah back to battle with a message for Joab, ordering that Uriah be put in the front lines of the fiercest fighting and then abandoned to die. After Uriah's death, David took Bathsheba as his wife. David may have thought his sin would remain hidden, but nothing escapes God's eyes. In 2 Samuel 12:1, we read, "The Lord sent Nathan to David. The prophet Nathan confronted David with a parable about a rich man who stole and killed the only sheep of a poor man. Indignant at the injustice of the story, David declared that the man deserved to die. It was then that Nathan pronounced, 'You are that man.'" Nathan's confrontation led David to repentance. In 2 Samuel 12:13, David confesses, "I have sinned against the Lord." Although God forgave David, the consequences of his sin were severe. Nathan prophesied that the sword would never depart from David's house and that the child born of his union with Bathsheba would die. Indeed, the child of David and Bathsheba became ill, and despite David's pleas, he died after 7 days. David's reaction to this loss is remarkable. In 2 Samuel 12:20, we read, "Then David got up from the ground, washed himself, put on lotions, and changed his clothes. He went into the house of the Lord and worshipped." When questioned about his behavior, David demonstrated his faith in God's sovereignty, saying in 2 Samuel 12:23, "But now that he is dead, why should I go on fasting? Can I bring him back again? I will go to him, but he will not return to me." The consequences of David's sin continued to unfold in the following years. One of Nathan's most painful predictions was fulfilled when Amnon, David's son, raped his half-sister Tamar. This act led to a cycle of revenge and rebellion that culminated in Absalom's revolt, another son of David. Absalom's rebellion forced David to flee from Jerusalem in a scene that echoed his previous flight from Saul. In 2 Samuel 15:30, we see a moving image of David. But David continued up the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went. His head was covered, and he was barefoot. All the people with him covered their heads and were weeping as they went up. During his flight, David faced insults and humiliations, but he responded with humility and trust in God. When Shimei, a man from Saul's family, cursed David, he replied in 2 Samuel 16, 11-12, "Leave him alone, let him curse me, for the Lord has told him to. It may be that the Lord will look upon my misery and restore to me his covenant blessing instead of his curse today." Absalom's rebellion ended with his death, against David's explicit orders to spare his son's life. David's lament for Absalom's death is one of the most emotional moments in the Bible. In 2 Samuel 18:33, we read, "The king was shaken. He went up to the room over the gateway and wept. As he went, he said, 'O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son, my son.'" Despite these personal challenges and tragedies, David's reign continued to be marked by military victories and prosperity for Israel. However, near the end of his reign, David committed another significant error by taking an unauthorized census of the people. In 2 Samuel 24:10, David acknowledges his mistake. After he had counted the fighting men, David was conscience-stricken, and he said to the Lord, "I have sinned greatly in what I have done. Now, Lord, I beg you, take away the guilt of your servant. I have done a very foolish thing." This census resulted in a plague that claimed the lives of 70,000 Israelites. The plague was only stopped when David built an altar and offered sacrifices at the site that would later become the location of the temple. David's reign, with its glories and sins, serves as a powerful reminder of the complexity of human nature and the constant need to trust in God. Despite his failures, David maintained a heart turned toward God, always seeking repentance and restoration when he fell. That is why, despite his sins, David is remembered as a man after God's own heart. In the last years of his reign, David turned his attention to a project he had long desired to undertake, the construction of a temple for the Lord. Although God indicated that it would be David's son, not David himself, who would build the temple, David dedicated himself to making extensive preparations for this great undertaking. In 1 Chronicles 22:5, we read about David's efforts. David said, "My son Solomon is young and inexperienced, and the house that is to be built for the Lord should be of great magnificence and fame and splendor in the sight of all the nations. Therefore, I will make preparations for it." So David made extensive preparations before his death. David's dedication to the cause of the temple is evident in the amount of resources he gathered for the project. In 1 Chronicles 22:14, David declares, "I have taken great pains to provide for the temple of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold, 1,000,000 talents of silver, quantities of bronze and iron too great to be weighed, and wood and stone. You may add to them." In addition to the material resources, David also took care to organize the Levites and priests for service in the future temple. He established shifts for the priests, organized the musicians and singers, and designated gatekeepers for the temple. All these preparations demonstrate David's concern to ensure that worship of God would be conducted with reverence and order after his death. As David grew older, the question of succession to the throne became pressing. Although God had already chosen Solomon to succeed David, there was an attempted usurpation by Adonijah, another son of David. This succession crisis is described in 1 Kings 1. In response to this threat, David acted decisively to establish Solomon as his successor. In 1 Kings 1:32-35, we read, "King David said, Call in the priest Zadok, the prophet Nathan, and Benaiah son of Jehoiada. When they came before the king, he said to them, Take your Lord's servants with you, and have Solomon my son mount my own mule, and take him down to Gihon. There have Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anoint him king over Israel. Blow the trumpet and shout, Long live King Solomon! Follow him up to the throne, and he is to sit on my throne and reign in my place. I have appointed him ruler over Israel and Judah. With Solomon firmly established as his successor, David turned his attention to giving his final instructions, both to Solomon and to the people of Israel. In 1 Kings 2:2-4, David gives wise counsel to Solomon. I am about to go the way of all the earth. So be strong, act like a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in his ways and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and regulations, as written in the law of Moses. Do this so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go, and that the Lord may keep his promise to me. If your descendants watch how they live, and if they walk faithfully before me with all their heart and soul, you will never fail to have a successor on the throne of Israel. In his last recorded words, David addresses the entire assembly of Israel. In 1 Chronicles 29:10-13, he offers a beautiful prayer of praise and thanksgiving. David praised the Lord in the presence of the whole assembly, saying, Praise be to you, Lord, the God of our father Israel, from everlasting to everlasting. Yours, Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor, for everything in heaven and earth is yours. Yours, Lord, is the kingdom. You are exalted as head over all. Wealth and honor come from you. You are the ruler of all things. In your hands are strength and power to exalt and give strength to all. Now, our God, we give you thanks and praise your glorious name. After a life filled with highs and lows, great triumphs and painful failures, David finally rested. In 1 Kings 2:10-11, we read, Then David rested with his ancestors and was buried in the city of David. He had reigned for 40 years over Israel, 7 years in Hebron and 33 in Jerusalem. David's legacy, however, continued far beyond his death. His impact on the history and faith of Israel is immeasurable. We can see this impact in several areas. First, David is remembered as the ideal king in Israel. Even centuries after his death, subsequent kings were often compared to David. A king like David became synonymous with a just and God-fearing king. Secondly, David left a significant literary legacy in the form of the Psalms. Many of the Psalms are attributed to David, and they continue to be a source of comfort, inspiration, and guidance for the faithful today. David's Psalms express the full range of human experience, from joy to sorrow, from trust to despair, always in the context of an unwavering faith in God. Thirdly, and perhaps most significantly, David became central to Israel's messianic expectations. God's promise to David of an eternal dynasty, the Davidic covenant, led to the hope of a son of David who would establish an everlasting kingdom. This hope found its fulfillment in the person of Jesus Christ. In Matthew 1:1, the New Testament begins with these words, This is the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Jesus is often referred to as the son of David in the Gospels, and his Davidic lineage is seen as the fulfillment of messianic prophecies. David's life, with all its complexities, offers us valuable lessons that transcend his specific time and context. The story of David teaches us about God's sovereignty in history. God chose David, the youngest son of Jesse, to become Israel's greatest king. This reminds us that God often works through the unlikely and the underestimated to accomplish his purposes. David's life also illustrates the importance of faith and trust in God. From his confrontation with Goliath to his years as a fugitive and his reign as king, David demonstrated unwavering trust in God, even in seemingly impossible circumstances. At the same time, David's story shows us the reality of sin and its consequences, even in the lives of heroes of faith. David's adultery with Bathsheba and the murder of Uriah had lasting consequences. However, David's response when confronted with his sin, genuine repentance and humble acceptance of God's judgment, provides us with a model for how we should deal with our own failures. David's life also teaches us about the importance of forgiveness and restoration. Despite his grave sins, David experienced God's forgiveness and was restored to fellowship with Him. This gives us hope that no matter how far we may have fallen, forgiveness and restoration are always available to those who turn to God with sincere repentance. Finally, David's story reminds us that greatness in God's eyes is not measured by perfection, but by a heart that continually seeks God. Despite his flaws, David is remembered as a man after God's own heart, because ultimately, his heart was always directed toward God. In conclusion, David's life is a rich and complex tapestry that continues to capture our imagination and touch our hearts thousands of years later. His journey from shepherding to the throne of Israel, his victories and defeats, his moments of triumphant faith and human failure, all combine to give us a portrait of a life lived in dynamic relationship with God. David's legacy as a warrior, king, poet, and man of faith continues to shape our understanding of leadership, worship, and what it means to live a life dedicated to God. His story reminds us that God can use imperfect people to accomplish His perfect purposes, and that true greatness lies not in the absence of flaws, but in the continual willingness to turn to God in all circumstances of life. May we, like David, seek to be people after God's own heart, trusting in His grace, responding to His correction, and dedicating our lives to His service.